So good morning, everybody. My name is Youssef Khalidi. This morning, I'll be presenting business continuity in Windows Azure, which is fancy for disaster recovery. Guys, I cannot see everybody on the edges here. So if I don't look at you, please come over or sit where you want to be. So guys, it's a relatively small number of people, so we can make this interactive. Okay? So if you want to, stop me, ask questions, or I'll leave plenty of time afterward. I'm going to assume you're here in this, I think, the furthest away room from the main area for a reason. So I assume that you care about maybe disaster recovery, business continuity, all these terms that, frankly, you would care about if you were sort of serious about the cloud. So I will start with some high-level stuff and go down in details, okay? So again, I'm Youssef. I've been in Microsoft for 10 years or so now. I'm actually one of the few people who started Windows Azure back in 2006. It's been a journey, and very happy to actually see us now on multiple iterations of this platform. For today, the objectives are really very simple. I would like you to leave the room with an understanding with some of the business continuity issues or support we have in the platform itself. Okay? It's important to know that the platform has certain support and what it is and what you can depend on, if you will. Second objective really is I want to discuss about the methods that you will need to in your application portfolios. You have to deploy in your application set to make sure they are highly available in a global sense. Okay? So I'll tell you more about what the platform has and what you should be doing. And the main takeaways are very simple, really. We have a very highly available infrastructure and geo-distributed infrastructure with options for you to have geo-deployments of your applications. However, it's a two-way street. The platform gives you support, but your application has to be built, if you will, or configured with high availability in mind in a global sense. Disaster recovery with DR, business continuity in general, does not come for free. And again, if you're in this room, probably you are looking at how can I have a very highly available application. And again, so you need some support from the platform, but your app has to do some certain stuff, which I'll go through. Lastly, like anything else in our business, and perhaps more so in this case, it depends, the solution depends on what you need. It depends on how much you want to spend on it. As you see toward the end of this presentation, there's a spectrum here. From very simple failover of an application within a data center, all the way to a very fancy, active global application pattern, if you will. The fancy pattern is highly available in a global sense. It's expensive in terms of development cost and so forth. The other side of the spectrum depends on if your application may not be as important, perhaps. You can do local restarts and so forth. So this business of a spectrum that's tied to your cost and your need is important too. So as I talk, and again, stop me if you want to, think of the portfolio of the apps you have in mind. One size does not fit all here, and depending on the cost and the need, you will be mixing and matching some of the techniques I'm mentioning here to build your application. Okay? So let's talk about this again. Please excuse the fancy term business continuity, but it's beyond disaster recovery, the process stuff I'll mention as well. But what's so different with the cloud stuff? Some of you have been in IT for a while, recognize that many of these concepts actually apply, have been applying for a long time. The cloud does change things a bit. For example, since you are depending on somebody else, in this case Microsoft, to host your application, there's a certain amount of things that you could have controlled directly if you had your own data centers, but now you have to depend on others to do. For example, there's now a new trust relationship. You have to assume that someone like us know what they're doing. So part of what I'm going to be showing today is that what we do behind the covers, some of the compliance things we meet, and so forth. So the relationship with you and your cloud provider. You have to plan for failures at multiple levels, stuff you have under your control in your data center, in your machines, and so forth, and stuff you have in the cloud. Implicit in this discussion, by the way, I'm going to assume you'll be following more or less a hybrid solution. You may have a pure, simple app in the cloud. More likely, you're going to have some stuff on-premises, some clients on-premises, maybe some devices, maybe some database on-premises. So the dependencies between those multiple levels, you have to keep in mind. You have to operate basically seamlessly through failures. How many of you have smartphones? I bet you everybody. How many of you have a tablet or a laptop and the like? All of us do, right? We assume now when we turn it on, whatever we're talking to is there. You know, I don't know about you, but if my favorite service is not up and running, I get pissed off. But it's an assumption now. It's an assumption that I have a device in my hand and a service up in, call it the cloud, call it out there. So the assumption that customers, all our customers have, is that those services have to be always up and running. And that's actually quite different than even 10, 15 years ago. So that's sort of different, if you will. Again, even 40 years ago, some people who were in mainframes and assumed things would be always up and running. Today, we have this cloud thing with clients who also assume things were up and running. Lastly, and I'll touch on this toward the very end, everything I'll be mentioning so far has to do with how to make your application highly available, disaster tolerant, if you will. But there's also the reverse side, where you could use the cloud to help your existing on-premises applications to become also highly available. And these are basically in the realm of backup, take your data on-premises, put them in the cloud, or even take applications in VMs, virtual machines, and run them in the cloud. So there's a reverse side as well. Other things, of course, remain the same. Your business goals are your business goals. Many of the techniques I'll be discussing are very much classical stuff, guys. Okay? This is the space where you want to apply existing knowledge in a new space, if you will. So the two questions is you have to ask yourself is, what do you expect of the platform? The platform I'm discussing today or my competitors, if you will. You have to know that, if you will. And also, what would it take to take your application or application set to make them really highly available? Okay. Please note, I'm using the term highly available and disaster recovery and the like in the same sense for a reason. We don't like to think of disaster recovery as necessarily a big step function where you're sort of running or not running or you have to worry about disaster recovery. Ultimately, our vision, and we're not totally there yet, guys, but our vision is to think of a seamless transition between simple failures all the way to major failures. Before I continue, failure handling is our business. So most of my presentation is about assuming bad things happening and how to recover from them, okay? The big picture is very simple, really. The three levels here. From the bottom up, question is, what does the platform do to prepare itself to handling problems? Again, assuming problems will happen, that's the assumption here. What is the preparedness of the platform itself to handle its own data, its own operations, if you will? You need to ask me this question. You need to ask your other providers this question. You have to know that the platform over which your application is running has to be prepared for bad things happening. So I spent a few slides telling you what we do, and this is really under the cover stuff, to be honest. Next is, what services does the platform give you, give your application, for it to become very highly available in a global sense? What optional services, what menu of options can you compose your app from? What can you depend on in the platform? To be more concrete, I could come here and tell you, we have this great platform, we're highly available, but we give you a bunch of VMs and you go to town yourself. Do everything yourself from scratch. That's not what I'm telling you. I'm telling you, actually, we have a bunch of services, storage services and the like. You'll see them in a second, that you can use to compose your application from. Or depend on third parties, whatever the case may be. But you have to have building blocks for this stuff. Lastly, of course, is your app architecture itself. And here, this is where we end up with a wide spectrum of options. From apps you're writing from scratch to existing stuff. From apps that are extremely important, they have to be either mission critical to your business, they have to be active with the fanciest features, all the way to perhaps a marketing website that you can restart next morning. So that's where the spectrum for the applications are. So my rest of my talk is basically just going up the stack, telling you more about the platform, give you some level of assurance that we know what we're doing, telling you about the building blocks, which you could use optionally to compose in your app and for your app to depend on. And finally, talk about some of the patterns for the applications themselves. Okay. So how do we, in Windows Azure, protect the platform itself from bad things happening? Sorry for the marketing title, if you will. I'm a techie, to be honest, but I needed to show you sort of the buckets here. There's sort of four buckets here. One, the physical infrastructure, data centers and the like. Our one is the fact that we are geo-distributed. That's sort of a key building block. You have to be in different places. Third is basic availability and security in the platform. And lastly, the whole compliance aspect of how do you know that we are doing what we're doing. By the way, each one of those is a whole talk, and we have white papers. At the end, I'll give you pointers, okay? But a bit about data centers. Short answer here, it's a multi-billion dollar investment of physical data center infrastructure and a global network here. This stuff at Microsoft predates Windows Azure. So as you know, before Windows Azure started, by the way, internally, we started talking about it around summer 2006. But we've been investing in this thing way before because of Hotmail, because of MSN Search, Passport, you know the whole list of systems. We have built on that infrastructure and that experience. And I'll be quite frank with you, few companies going forward can actually afford this space. This stuff is very expensive. And scale is key. So our strategy is very simple, to be honest. Leverage what we have been doing so far and grow in scale so we can actually afford all this infrastructure. People take it for granted, by the way. And yours truly, if you ever had the chance to visit a data center, one of the new modern ones, and look at the infrastructure aspects, it's really eye-boggling in a sense. It opens your minds to all the stuff we take for granted, if you will. The good thing is something like Windows Azure has the stuff behind the scene. Geo-distribution is key. It goes hand in hand with the first point. You have to be in multiple locations because you have to assume that a certain location may experience a problem. For minor stuff, and you'll be surprised what minor stuff can happen, a third-party contractor digging in the street may hit the wrong fiber cable in the ground. It happens. That's why we usually have three of them going to any given building, for example. It can happen that the local utility of power goes down. A diesel generator has to come up. If it doesn't come up, the site is down, etc. So you have multiple sites. We worry about all the stuff. Basic availability and security of the platform. This is sort of earlier material perhaps we presented in previous events, but within any given system in Azure, your app is basically isolated from other apps. This is for security, if you don't want to see other apps, you basically run in a virtualized environment. It's virtualized in the server sense. Every server is sliced and diced using hypervisor, but also in the network sense, through your own overlay network, if you will. And as you know, we have an SLA and so forth for the actual platform. Lastly, compliance. I have a slide toward the end for compliance, if we get a chance to mention it. But for those of you in this space, you know, there's an alphabet soup here. ISO this, SAS that, PCI, HIPAA, and so forth. Base platform on Windows Azure, by the way, including our data centers, are ISO 27001 compliant and SSAE 16 compliant. And we have all the stuff. I'll give you the URL at the end for the actual details on how we get to the audits and so forth. That's important. You have to ask us for this stuff. And beyond that, there are compliance regimes that your application may be under, which we should talk about how to attain them, if you will. To some, this may sound boring, guys, but trust me, we have to have this stuff if you want to be serious about enterprise. So let's talk about how the infrastructure itself, this is Windows Azure, the code yours truly and others work on. How is it itself highly available? And the two techniques we use, and this is again behind the covers, are simple really, classical. Redundancy and partitioning. Redundancy says for any given thing, a copy of data, an application instance, if you will, there is another one somewhere else. For data, typically there are three at least. But the point is that any given thing can go away. Remember, this is a scale-out architecture. Many, many, many machines globally distributed. At any point of time, something goes wrong because a disk drive doesn't spin up, because a machine goes up in flames, not literally, but almost so. So things can and do happen at that scale. So there's not a single point of failure anywhere, basically. And you have redundancy of everything, from a software architecture, from duplicating the writes, the data, which I'll say more about this, to, of course, the actual infrastructure itself. The other basic technique is partitioning, which means there are units where we treat them as, if you will, separate units where if something really goes wrong, the damage is confined to the partition. Of course, a coarse-grained example is a data center. But more interestingly, and this is, again, behind the covers, you guys don't see it if you're using Azure, is the way we build it behind the scenes, everything is built in terms of these relatively small stamps, clusters. Think, 1,000 machines, 8,000 VMs or something, small number, basically. These units are, to us, behind the scene, are units of allocation, and they're controlled by our control software, the so-called fabric controller. Offline, I can give you pointers, all of that. The point is, behind the scene, when we do, for example, a software upgrade for our own software, we don't just go test it and blast it globally. That would be not prudent, to be honest. Instead, we do local testing and so forth. Then we slowly bring it out into partitions to make sure that this partition is in good shape and we roll it forward and so forth. If something really goes wrong, we're typically confined to one of those partitions, and that's by design. So the same mentality permeates our platform. By the way, I'm telling you these things for two reasons. The main reason is that for you to have some assurance that the platform takes care of itself. But the other important reason is, in your own applications, you probably want to follow very similar patterns. There's nothing special here for Azure per se. The same thing recursively should apply to your applications too as well. So Azure itself, by the way, is a bunch of platform pieces and more apps itself. So by induction, if you will. It goes up to your level as well. Third important point is, and this is when I say optimize for mean time to recovery, it's what MTTR stands for, is fancy words for recover quickly. Recover quickly as opposed to spending your sweet time initializing the code, figuring if it's okay, or debugging every last problem. The key which we operate the platform, and the key which we recommend you write your application is, assume you have to start up very quickly, even if it has to be degraded performance. For example, if you have some service and some failures can happen to your application, find a way to write the code in such a way that you can at least come back with read-only mode until you figure out how to kick back into a read-write mode, for example. Everything we do in our platform is optimized for mean time recovery. And this is true for the software architecture and even the human processes we do to run the system. And it's different than how we have classically, many of us, have built enterprise server software. If you look at a typical piece of code, which is written for a DLL or a class library for a typical application, for a server application, it spends all its time at the beginning initializing, assuming that I'll get all my resources and I'm going to be running for a long, long time. Don't get me wrong, do a good job initializing, what have you, but assume you have to come up very quickly. In academia, they call this thing recovery-oriented computing, fancy terms for the same thing. And there are papers I can give you offline as well. But please keep that in mind. It's a different shift, speaking from somebody who's built enterprise software before doing this cloud stuff. Okay, where are we today? This is the current picture for the global presence of Windows Azure. This is here and now, by the way. If you go to the portal, you see the stuff. We are basically in three major regions: North America, Western Europe, and Southeast Asia. And in each region, we have multiple subregions. You have control when you allocate your accounts, when you allocate your computation, your storage, to decide where a component goes. You can mix and match, of course. So the policy is yours. And if you go to the portal, it's very simple, really. You say, I want to be here, I want to be there, etc. And you can co-locate a certain application with storage, for example, etc. Second point I want to make is that this is the current picture. We are expanding it. And stay tuned. We're going to be in different geographies in the future as well. What's also shown in this picture, we also have a CDN network. a content distribution network. It's another optional service we have. It's like an Akamai service, if you want. So again, the summary here is we are geo-distributed today. You have control over where you place your applications, where do you access your storage and so forth. And decisions range from pure physics. You want to be local latency and the like to be close to your region, all the way to you don't want to be in a certain area because of geopolitical reasons or whatever the case may be. The options, the control is yours. So sort of a summary what the platform does to protect itself, if you will. I have to be honest with you, we have an ongoing investment in this space. You can never invest enough in this space. So for do things, for example, all the platform metastate. Metastate is fancy for all the our state of our software. When you submit your application, your configuration settings, where things are, all this stuff, we usually do things to it. We always write it to our storage system, which, as you see in a second, is also geo, replicates the data. And out of band, we do our own replications as well, within the same data center and remotely as well. We're just paranoid. Again, remember, our paranoia helps you, and you may want to apply it yourself. Testing, simulations, and process refinement may sound boring because it's a process thing, but you'll be surprised where you can find out. Best laid plans for failover do not work if the machine you're failing over is not ready or is down, for example. So you have to test whatever procedures you have. I'll come back to this theme later on. Lastly, capacity management. Yours truly is a software guy, but I know more about supply chain management than I need to at this stage, than I should perhaps, because to deal with the scale we're dealing with that picture I showed you, a nice map with a bunch of data centers, in which you have to always install machines, retire all machines and the like, we take care of this stuff. So capacity management is a big deal. And we are not perfect yet. I'll tell you about our limitations later on. Specifically, we don't allow you to reserve capacity yet, but these are things hopefully will come in time. So that was sort of what about the platform level, if you will, preparedness and what we do behind the covers. Again, offline, be happy to tell you more details. I want to move up. Remember the three sort of picture platform services now? This is the second part now. These are the services in the platform that you can leverage. And everything I'll be telling you now is actually kind of optional. You can mix and match these pieces. There are really four buckets here. One is, which I will not spend much time on today because we have lots of material on, is the basic health management of the platform. Just a quick summary of that stuff is any given application with this Azure comes in, so built in the price and the mechanism, the ability for it to be restarted, local restart, local health management. If any given machine fails, we will find a different physical machine, if need be, automatically, reprovision everything, replumb the network, get all your settings in place, and get you up and running as well. So there's a basic health management sort of built in the platform. And this is true for any of the so-called web role, worker role, or the VM role. It doesn't matter, really. All the roles we have, all the application types we have. Okay? The same applies to platform services themselves. So if any given piece or storage infrastructure goes down, automatically we recover and so forth. And I assure you, this is all done automatically. We will never scale if I have humans doing all these things, if you will. So again, offline, there are a lot of stuff here I'm sort of eliding, where you should assume it's taken care of for yourself, including, for example, network load balancing. If one of your front ends goes down, the traffic is shunted somewhere else and so forth, it's all built in, okay? I assume you know this stuff. If not, I'll give you pointers for it. Now, in addition to this, we have infrastructure in our storage system. This is our highly scalable storage substrate. This is our blob store, table store, and we have queues there as well. Our storage system is a foundation for our platform. That's where we store all our state, and that's where your application probably will store state as well. And I'll tell you more how we do recovery and in it as well. Then we have a number of optional services and patterns for managing your SQL data. Things like DB backup, to do the actual copying of the blobs, and also data sync as well. And lastly, we have the traffic manager service, which helps you with, all the fancy picture I showed you? You can decide to put your some app in Europe and some app in the US and the like. You have to get to it, right? So the traffic manager can help you with global network engineering, failing over from one place to the other when failures happen. Okay? So I'm going to spend a slide or two in each one of those boxes. Let's start with storage. You may know this thing, but I'm going to, just to complete the picture, tell you about it. So Windows Azure is what WA stands for. Storage layer is a basic storage foundation here. This is a very highly scalable storage system. That's where we have, you can have big blobs, basically big files, if you will, which can be gigabytes, so up to a terabyte each. That's where you can map them as a local file, like a local NTFS file system, for example, or a raw partition. Writes to it, to any of those blobs, are written three times within the same DC. And the three copies land in separate so-called fault domains. In practice, separate racks, by the way. So local writes are synchronously written three times for durability, of course. In addition, what we do is we do geo-replication across subregions. So every write of your application write ends up being having three synchronous copies locally, plus a remote copy asynchronously to a remote site, which there are going to be three copies there as well. I'll show you how this works in a second. This is basically, it's on for blob and tables. We're going to add it for queues. Important to note that we only replicate within the same region, and that's by design. We have customers who are in Europe, don't want to replicate the data to the US and vice versa. You can opt out of this stuff, by the way. And as of last week, if you opt out, you get a discount. So the base price includes geographical replication of your data. You can opt out to get a discount, or because you don't want any replication if you want to. And as I mentioned, this is asynchronous replication, because due to physics, by the way, because these subregions are hundreds of miles away by design. Why by design? We want to handle major problems. Earthquakes, hurricanes, big stuff, okay? Since it's a long distance, we have to do asynchronous replication, which means there's a delta between a data being written here and there. Keep that in mind, please. And the way it works is, the basic idea is that, as you may know, the way you typically access these blobs, ultimately through a URL. And the way it works is that the existing URL continues to work after a failover. So very simply, typically, you may have a host name like that, some account, pointing effectively to a location like South Central US. And it's done basically through a DNS lookup. All your writes to a location is asynchronously replicated to a remote site. If the site has a major problem, we will fail over automatically to the remote subregion. We update the DNS, and your application then will basically see the same view as if it had before. It's the same URL. It continues to go to a remote location. This typically, the replication part typically takes minutes. The failover to a remote data center, which I'll discuss in a second, is only done in a major disaster. Okay? And touch wood, we never had to declare a major disaster. So this solution today, and this is a caveat, is designed for major disasters only. So you cannot access your remote site, your remote copy, if you will, until the disaster is declared. I'll tell you more about our roadmap, how we're going to remove that. But this is great insurance for you guys. Basically, not only your data have three copies locally, you have a similar number of copies remotely as well. A question, okay, go ahead. What do we use for regularly monthly maintenance? Of what? Maintenance of what?
For the application. I mean, let's say you have some patches and fixes that you have to install every month.
Yes.
Would that downtime,
so you can avoid that downtime? Very good question. So the question is, how do we specifically manage the monthly patches for application on the log, and how to avoid the downtime? And this is all documented in our SLA documentation, but the short answer is, any given application has multiple instances. Okay, we don't have a single instance application in our infrastructure. And the way it's done is For example, you may have an application doing some maintenance or some service to give you, from anything from simple website to the storage system itself. The way it works is for any given role, it has multiple instances that are laid over effectively different fault domains and what we call update domains. And you have knobs for you to lay over, to basically specify your application across these concepts. What we do is when a time comes for a patch, we only patch through one update domain at a time. And we have APIs for you as well. Everything I say for me applies to you, by the way. We have APIs for you to control how often you roll over your application, if you will. So the short answer is that we don't bring down any application at a time to patch and bring it up. We bring down a portion of it at a time. We do rolling upgrades. If something goes back, we go back, to be honest. Again, this is part of the first bucket I did not cover earlier today. And I can give you offline many details. But this is a basic concept of how we structure applications. Now, you may have a classical application off the shelf, maybe a VM by itself, that is not amenable to have multiple instances, right? And for that, you'd have to schedule your updates to that VM yourself, basically. Okay? But ultimately, the proper way to structure these applications is for any given instance of an application to have multiple instances, such that you can bring one portion of it where the rest are still serving traffic. And it's easier for stateless applications and much harder, of course, for stateful parts of the application. Again, offline we can discuss. Again, this we have plenty of documentation on how to do this thing. But that's how we built everything in the system. At this point, typically I get this question, which is, how about the location of customer data? And that's so this, I think the slide was done by a lawyer, I'm not sure, but a lot of lawyer language in here. Short answer is that we obey what you tell us. Sorry, it's a busy slide, but we obey what you tell us. If you say put your data in this region, we keep it there. If you tell us do not geo-replicate, we do not geo-replicate. If you tell us geo-replicate, we do it only within the same region. So you will not take your data in the US and copy it to Europe. And there are only very specific cases where we may access your data, typically with your permission, and where we might copy it or not copy it. This is important. It's part of the compliance story. If you don't ask me this question, your customer will probably ask you this question. So we have this thing, I think, offline with more details here. So basically, we're very careful with this stuff, guys. Some people have an image of the cloud as this amorphous thing, and you put stuff in there, you don't know where the things are. You have to know certain boundaries. So we hide from you how we partition stuff within a subregion. This business of clusters and racks and stuff you don't even know about, also network topology and the like. That's by design. But location of data, you should know where it is. And you do in this platform. Yes, please. Yeah. I'm trying. I'm not a lawyer, but there are cases where we have to obey local laws, of course. Okay, and if we get a court order for certain things, we have to go obey it. And this is what this says.
So if I have data in Europe, and an American company gets a lawsuit to look at that data, then you can get my data from Europe to the US.
There are certain cases, and I would like to offline show you the legal language for that, including the European Safe Harbor support we have in the platform as well. So let's go offline and answer this question, okay? And shortly, I'll give you a lawyer to talk to, because I'm not the right person. But short answer is they are usually, in any case, we have to obey laws. So we cannot do something that basically breaks the law. That's a given. A few other services we have. Again, these are optional again. There's a service called SQL Data Sync, which can be very useful to synchronize your SQL data. It's actually designed for synchronization and not really for disaster recovery, but you can mix and match it. And we have some recommendation how to use it, how not to use it. In a nutshell, this helps you synchronize SQL databases, whether they are on-premises or in the cloud, whether they are the SQL database service or instances running in VMs. It's very powerful in that sense. Think of this thing as like a set of tools, if you will, that you can configure differently. You can use SQL Data Sync for make extra copies. You can use them to move data from on-premises to the cloud and vice versa for hybrid scenarios. In the afternoon, by the way, I'm giving a talk about hybrid scenarios, which we talk more about those kind of scenarios. The challenges with it is that it's really, it does not keep preserved transaction boundaries here, okay? Especially if you have, you know, multiple databases or interaction with other things as well. So use it with caution, if you will. What we recommend, actually, instead is, and we have a white paper on this, is how to, is basically use backup, snapshotting of SQL. So you can snapshot the instance of SQL using a command, dbcopy, and then you can take the output and either replicate it yourself, or a very common thing that we do ourselves, by the way, is we write to our blob as well. Once you write to our blob, you end up with three extra copies and a remote copy as well. And this pattern is documented in there as well. This is a nice white paper we published recently. Do note that if you consider using blobs to store the copy of the database, the restrictions I mentioned earlier still apply. That is, you cannot get your copy unless we declare a major disaster. So if you need it very often and the like, replicate yourself as well, please. Again, in due course, hopefully we'll remove the limitations. But it's important to understand the limitation. Because I'm going quickly because I want to make sure we get most of the picture in place. So let's talk about the roadmap a bit. And there was a presentation about this on Monday. I have the link at the end of my presentation. Sorry for the wrong order in which we scheduled the talks. But there was a whole talk on basically just the SQL part for backup of SQL and how we do disaster recovery for SQL. So I'll give you the link at the end as well. But on that roadmap, we are going to evolve SQL Azure to enable user-initiated geo-replication of the data. So there will be support in SQL Azure in the future. Sorry, we renamed SQL Azure. Now it's called Database SQL, I think, isn't it? The marketing guys did a change on us. Same code, same service. We're going to add, effectively, geo-replication for SQL. And it's going to be across the geos, very similar story like I discussed earlier, including user control. So when you have remote copies, you'll be able to get to your remote copy in read-only mode even during production, which is important, by the way, for two reasons, really. You want to be able to verify that the data is being copied all the time. And secondly, you want to be able to do your own decision to fail over, not waiting for us to turn the lever on to a disaster mode, basically. So this is coming. Again, this was an earlier presentation with more details on this. The other feature coming for SQL is a point-in-time recovery mechanism. So if you think of all the possible problems, it's one thing about having copies of the data for geo recovery and so forth, but in many cases, a human makes mistakes, or the software has a bug, and you want to go back a day or two earlier or a week earlier for your copy. So think of this thing as one of the backup scenarios. We can go back in time number of days earlier as well. Lastly, you will see a counterpart for these features coming also for the underlying storage system. So the theme here is that today we do the basic replication locally and remotely. In the future, you'll also be having the ability, the control of getting to your remote copies as well, including point-in-time recovery mechanisms. Please. The question is, are we planning to have recovery for Azure storage? Yeah. Sure. Today you can snapshot blobs, okay? But you'll see better support, not unlike this slide, also for blobs coming as well. I don't have this for you, though, but we're working on it. But today you can actually snapshot blobs to have a separate copy and go back to it as well. Okay? But so blob snapshots have been for a while.
Yeah.
Tables, I know it's coming. I'm not sure if it's there or not yet. I can get you offline the contact. And if you can catch me offline, we have a storage expert at the event as well. I can point him to you. How do you do backup today?
Well, in SQL Azure, you do the backup.
So in this case, if you end up with a blob instance, you as I mentioned, by default, it's also replicated remotely as well. So that's sort of built in. Let's talk about Windows Traffic Manager for a second. This is currently in CTP, which is fancy for beta, basically, but it exists out there. Traffic Manager really, it has two jobs, but in this context, one important point. Suppose you have structured application, you have a copy in Europe, copy in the US, and you're happy. You want to be able to get your backup copy if something goes wrong. Think of the network, basically, at large. What Traffic Manager will do is that it actually has two policies, so-called performance policy, and the other one is the availability policy. So you can use it to do load balancing if you have an active-active solution, which I will discuss in a second. So both of your copies of application in Europe and US are all active. You can send traffic to both of them at the same time based on the locality of your clients. So you can configure it such that your US customers end up in a US data center, European customers in the European data center, for example. You can also configure it for failover. So if something goes wrong for application in the US, it will shunt the traffic to your European copy. Okay. So again, it's optional. You can use third-party services for this. It's built-in, integrated through a portal, the whole deal, basically. This will become, currently, as I said, it's in beta. It will graduate, like all the our services eventually graduate to become a full-fledged service. Okay, so of the three-layer figure I showed you, I discussed initially what we do in the platform itself. I just finished the section about the services available to you optionally to architect your application. Now let's talk about how to architect your application, assuming you want to make it very highly available globally. Just remember these three boxes, basically. I mean, the very simple starting points. One is, you do want to deploy to multiple geos. You want to be in multiple sub-regions, multiple data centers, if you will, if you want to really be highly available. Again, our data centers are very highly available themselves, but you never know. So if you want to be really highly available, you want to be in multiple locations. So you can specify the location, both for the compute resources, for your storage resources. The policy is yours. There are some capacity considerations I will get to in a second, which includes some of the caveats limitations we have today about the need to have some capacity to fail over to if something bad happens. But again, one principle is be in different locations. Looks simple, but it's important. Second one is, as I discussed just a moment ago, you have to be able to route your traffic to your different copies. It doesn't help that you have both copies up and running everything if your customers cannot get to them. There are implications here, by the way, for what service you use to, like, traffic manager to get to them, and also any implicit dependencies you may have. So I'll give you an example. Just be careful of any dependencies you may have on premises or your client side to go to your application. If you build in any knowledge that this app has always to go to this data center and you have to fail over, make sure that that knowledge can be updated. This can be firewall rules, ACLs on network, and so forth. The third point, which is really the hardest one, is your data. Data is always a hard thing, guys. Here, you have to synchronize the data between different copies, one way or the other. In a very async disaster recovery mode, all the way to very active, very synchronous, depending on the application. If you do your job right, the hardest part will be the right-hand side one, whereas most of your components will be somewhat stateless. You depend on your storage layers, whether they may be, to do synchronization of data. Now, as I mentioned way, way earlier, think of your applications portfolio that you have. Very simplistic picture, but you've probably seen this before. None of us have apps at all equal, right? For any business you have mission-critical stuff. Probably few, that's why it's a pyramid like this, where if they go down, your business is affected directly. Those are presumably where the business is willing to invest real money in. And I'll tie this into our pattern in a second. So we have really mission critical. There's a big set next of high impact applications. those that you may be able to tolerate being down for minutes, maybe a bit longer, but you really want them to be up and running very quickly. And you probably have a long tail of stuff. The marketing website I mentioned maybe, or some documentation that it's okay, some customer may complain, but we can get to it after we get to the other ones first. Keep this in mind, guys, because it's all tied to cost. If it's as cheap, do everything in the first category. It's probably going to do, you're going to probably do have a spectrum out there. So the spectrum basically is this. For your least important apps, you're probably going to do the first one on the left-hand side there, redeploy on failure. That is, maybe run one copy only, one application, you know, when I say one copy, whatever your application may look like, in a given location. Depend on the local failure recovery, which is quite good, actually. And be ready when something goes bad to redeploy on failure somewhere else. You can script it through the APIs we have, or you can have a human get a pager and redeploy it. Do this for the least important apps you have. Okay? And frankly, guys, many customers just do that. But do it consciously, please. Because remember, you have to actually do a redeploy somewhere else and the like. Of course, second category is more of like an active-passive pattern, where you have your service, your application running in one particular sub-region. It's active, it's taking traffic, storing data, but you have a sort of a passive copy somewhere else. And please take the word passive with a grain of salt. There's a whole spectrum there being truly passive, cold, warm, hot. People do also differentiation here. The point is this. The point is, if something goes wrong to your active copy, your passive copy can graduate to be active very quickly. You have the capacity reserved, most of it perhaps. You have your data being replicated. Maybe some recovery is needed. Maybe you lose a few minutes, but you can up and running. Use traffic manager to flip you over. Most apps we see, by the way, fit in this category. Lastly, there's the super-duper active, fanciest, tip of the pyramid, mission-critical applications. In theory, or in principle, this is an application which has multiple copies globally. Each one can take traffic actively, and all writes are resolved somehow. There are some of those apps, by the way. I mean, if you look at something like the Azure Directory infrastructure we have, it fits in that category. You want directory resolutions to succeed no matter what. Okay? And you may look at the patterns within the application, make some of those patterns active-passive. So resolution may be always succeeding, but maybe updates can be a bit delayed, that kind of stuff. The other point I want to make sure to understand, this is a simplistic model here. Real life is more complex. My last example is what was that. Even for an active-active application, a subpart of it may be active-passive as well. Balance is the key. Remember your application portfolio pyramid, if you will. There's a balance between cost, how much money you want to invest in this thing, the complexity, and also the reserve capacity. Today, by the way, and I say this again later on, we do not give you a mechanism to reserve capacity. The only way to reserve capacity is having some instance running somewhere else. It could be logic and not doing much, but you're actually using capacity. That's the only way today I can give you capacity. Sorry, guys. We'll fix that. So remember that. For any of the solutions, redeploy and failure, active-passive, active-active, if you must guarantee capacity in a remote location, in any location, you must have something in advance there. Lastly, this whole plan-tested business stuff. All of us, I'm sure, have fire drills in our workplaces where you get an email, they fire the alarms, we all file out and come back in. You know why they do that. They have to make sure that these fire alarms really work, that these building fancy electronics really work, that we humans know where to file out to. Please, I implore you guys, you have to test your whatever DR story you have. Your code may be perfect. Your human processes may not be perfect. The one administrator you have who knows how to redeploy the application may be on vacation in Hawaii. How do you get to him or her? Obvious, I know, guys, but we do this thing all the time ourselves, and we're surprised at times. So whatever fancy scheme you have, test it. Test it monthly in some way or the other. If you want to be truly, truly active, the most important one, even do failover if you can afford it. If not, do a failover every few months, but you have to test the stuff. And you'll be surprised what you find out. Dependencies on your application, on your local premises, or network and the like. So remember the previous picture? It's really a very simplistic model. It's a simple model here. For mission critical, look at active-active type of designs with the caveats I gave you, that there are so subspectrum there as well. For the bulk, you probably do some active-passive. Have your measure copy, replication of your state, and the ability to for the other copy to come up speed very quickly, either by being automatically restarted through a traffic manager, traffic redirect, and so forth, or maybe a redeploying failure. You can script the redeploying failure. Have something on premises or something in the cloud somewhere else and just start, for example. You have many options there as well. Now, to summarize things to think about, then give you a caveat, so what's missing. Remember the cost question. How available you want to be for a given application set, a given pattern regarding versus the cost here. This stuff doesn't come for free. And I'm not referring necessarily what we charge you per se, but the cost you have to do to make your application fit the pattern, active-active, and so forth. Second, look at the components of your application. Which one are stateless and which one have to be distributed and replicated? Simple rule of thumb here is try as much as possible, especially for new application sets, new configurations, to make them as stateless as possible, push the complexity to the data layers. This way, you can redistribute most of your components, get your configuration settings to replumb everything, and worry about the complexity in the data layer instead of anywhere else. This is an example of when I look at the logic that needs to be site-specific. Sometimes we're sloppy. Sometimes you build dependencies without you knowing. A very good example I give you, and this is from real life, we have customers who invested quite a bit in having a nice active, passive, and so forth. When the time comes to failover, everything works fine, but the clients cannot reconnect. Why? Someone built a dependency on-premises in their corporate firewall with an ACL that can only go to that geo, that sub-region, if you will. And they forgot that after all the automation, everything fails over, they have to do something on-premises to resolve the network that way as well. So simple, but think of all this end-to-end, please. Lastly, when it comes to replication of state, you want synchronous or asynchronous? Typically, asynchronous is the way to go for long distances because of physics, it's latency. That means there's a window in there, you may lose some data. For truly active-active traffic, for stuff you must not ever, ever, ever lose, make it synchronous, wait for the call to come back, and so forth. You, of course, you quickly realize you cannot do it for everything, so you have to be very careful about knowing which apps you have to do in that pattern. Now, this slide is labeled important considerations. It should be labeled caveats. We are not perfect yet. So the limitation in this slide I mentioned, I want to reiterate for full disclosure here. As I mentioned, data stored in blobs and tables are replicated automatically to a remote data center. Again, in the same region, in a different sub-region. However, as I mentioned, you cannot access that remote copy until we, Microsoft, declare a disaster. And we have never declared a disaster. I hope we never do, but you know how this goes. We'll only declare a disaster, by the way, guys, if a whole data center goes up in flames or a cluster is a recoverer for some really bad reason for a long time. And as you might expect, there's always tension here. Maybe I can recover it in 2 more minutes. Should I wait for 2 more minutes or flip the switch? So this is currently a very big lever that we don't want to flip. In due course, as I mentioned, we will give you access to remote copy. But for now, it's final insurance, if you will. This is that we have a remote copy for you. This is important because if you are, for example, building a fancy application, active-active, active-passive, and you want to get to a remote copy, you cannot depend on us to get you the remote copy, unless a disaster has happened. So you may want to do your own replication anyway. Note that today we have no support for, beyond what I mentioned, for the data and for traffic management and for synchronization of the SQL, we don't have any support for application failover across subregions. So all the fancy stuff we have for application restart, deploying the network, lifecycle management, probing, monitoring, et cetera, are done per subregion. So it's an exercise for you at the moment if you want to do a remote restart. Now, the good news is we have APIs for all of that. You can do it from the nice portal all the way to script it through PowerShell or calling REST APIs from your favorite scripting or programming language. So you have the power to do it, but we don't do anything automatically for you at the moment. Lastly, the capacity question. Today, the only way to guarantee capacity in any given location is by allocating your application, VMs basically, your instances, your roles, whatever the case may be. That is, there's no out-of-band mechanism to say, reserve me X amount of capacity when I need it, I can use them. Hopefully we'll fix that in the future, but so the way to do capacity reservation for today, you have to run something somewhere. Whether it takes traffic or not, it's your call, but you have to be running something there. Typically what people do, by the way, is they have a full-fledged active copy of the service at scale and maybe a smaller one in the remote region and hope that if they have to flip over, they can expand the capacity or at least run a degraded mode for a while, which fits the pattern I mentioned earlier of optimizing to meet up recovery. Just fail over and figure it out later, if you will. Again, we are working on removing these limitations, but please remember them. I have a few minutes. I want to just sort of segue into one thing, just leave you with a couple of points of how you can utilize the cloud in general, and Windows Azure in particular, to help you with disaster recovery solutions of your existing stuff on-premises, using basically Azure as a site for DR. And it's really two basic patterns here. One is data. How is a way to back up your data? So all of us have data on-premises and also ways. The cloud actually is quite good at this. If you can get your bits to the cloud somehow, think of the power. You end up with 3 extra copies in one location, and if you want to, 3 extra copies in yet another location for the price of just storing the blob and transferring it up there. It's actually quite powerful. You can do it today with just calling the REST APIs yourself. You can script this thing. There is a bunch of third-party applications. There are third-party appliances available today in the marketplace. You can plop them on-premises, hook them up, give them your Windows Azure credentials, and they'll do it for you. They'll even do local dedupe and what have you as well for them. The stuff is available off the shelf today. I don't want to go advertise any given vendor. There's a bunch of them out there. Think about guys. This actually really works. You can also run VMs in the cloud, especially with the announcement we have made this week. This is true, of course, for a class of applications. Your app has to be able to be runnable with all its dependencies in a different environment. So don't take a big machine that exudes fiber channel and a big SAN behind it running in the cloud. That does not work. But many other apps just work. So if you figure out how to package them and the dependencies, you can have a disaster recovery solution here, where if something really goes bad in your on-premises, you have the option to fire up your application with the data you just replicated in the first step and run them up in the cloud, at least for your mission-critical applications. And I would seriously consider that for your mission-critical applications. Look at the option of depending on part of the cloud for you. Now, again, think of the power here. If something happens bad in your local data center, you have 8 of them from us to run your stuff. Now, the caveat, again, is consider your dependencies. This can be sometimes easier said than done because of the dependencies. So if you have a bunch of apps, depending on AD, make sure as part of your failover to the cloud, your AD infrastructure is also restarted in the cloud, which we can do now, by the way, et cetera. You know, so that's, remember your dependencies. It's easy to take a VM by itself. It's hard to take a whole graph of an application set. And if your application set on-premises is anything like I see in IT in general, it can be a very, very, very complex graph. Know how to cut the graph, basically. I want to note a given service. I don't have time for this, to be honest, but in Windows Server 2012, we have built-in support for backup to the cloud. Windows Azure is one of the options, by the way. You can use third-party options, too. This built-in 2012. I'm sure there's documentation somewhere else, but you can take 2012 and make Windows Azure as one of the destinations for backup of your data. And again, that's built-in. If you don't want to use this, you can use my competition. Fine with me, but use us, please. And almost done, guys. This is, I alluded to this one earlier. We have a comprehensive framework for compliance. I kept this over the end just to gloss over it very quickly, and I'll give you a URL for a whole website which has details here. In a nutshell, we understand fully that the industry has a bunch of compliance regimes that we have to follow, and we do follow. Specifically, today we're ISO and ISO 20001 certified and SSAE 16 attestation, attested, if you will. Everything's documented online, and we are working also on the next levels up beyond the basic foundation for compliance. Some of you or some of your customers will care about that. If you've been running stuff on-premises in your DCs, you probably do this yourselves. Now you have to depend on people like us, so we have to make sure we have the stuff in place. And the location for information should be on the next slide. Assuming this thing clicks. Yep. So we have something called Windows Azure Test Center off the same infrastructure websites we have, where you have a lot more information here. Any updates will show up here as well. And if you have any questions, ask me offline or just go there. You should find all the privacy questions. You ask me questions about data and the like. This is the best source for that information. Okay, guys, I'm actually done. So in summary, we do have multi-level failure handling in this platform because we take it very seriously. Some of us really come to work and say, okay, let's make sure I can handle the next possible problem. There are building blocks in the platform. Virtually all of them are optional. You can mix and match as you see fit. But the point is we give you these building blocks, not just you have to go do the thing from scratch, if you will. As with everything, and particularly in this space, having the right balance between cost and value and what you need for your application set is important. I do not recommend you take all your application portfolio, trying to make them active and all fancy stuff. That would be very cost prohibitive. Carefully look at your application set, and I know you're going to find some things that have to fit in different categories I mentioned earlier. Lastly, we're not done. I give you a bunch of caveats in these presentations. Maybe in another year or two, if we discuss this thing again, I'll tell you more about how we remove these limitations. But the limitations are there. You should know about them, but you can work around them. And the reason is simple. We have worked around them. So, for example, data replication, you can always replicate by hand the critical stuff if you have to and so forth. Okay, guys, I'm done, and we have time for questions. So I'll be here for Q&A and afternoon down at TLC as well. Okay? Thank you very much.